last train is nearly due. The underground is closing soon. In the dark, deserted station, restless in anticipation, a man waits in the shadow.
You never know with the circle, Missy. It has no beginning and no ending.
Once upon a time, there was this young lady who used to travel round and round and round the circle line of the tube looking for an old lady, the Underground Duchess. You must have heard the tales. Some say it's just a story, wild speculation, or a damn lie. But I saw her once, just a glimpse, mind, but she was there, as sure as my name's Earl Johnson. And you've got to trust an Earl. I'm a man of breeding, little lady. A man of breeding.
His restless eyes meet and scratch at all that they can touch or catch. Hidden deep within his pocket, safe within his silent socket, he holds his cutting crayon.
This could be the one. The rebirth of the great British novel. Day of the Squirrel by Jenny Madison. The novel starts with this boy growing up on a farm, and he befriends a red squirrel called Roger. He is at one with the squirrel. Every day they frolic happily in the woods. But then one morning he wakes up to find Roger is nowhere to be found. He finds that grey squirrels have moved into the area. He vows that one day he will make it up to Roger and red squirrel kind, and pledges vengeance against grey squirrels. 20 years later, he has become a top scientist, and he genetically enhances the red squirrels so they quickly displace the grey squirrels. But to his horror, he finds he has made them so intelligent that they start to take over from humans. The red squirrels plan to take over the world. He knows he's the only one who can stop them. He alone can save mankind. Or at least that's the gist of it. A fantasy, thriller, science fiction type thing. People must think I'm crazy typing away on the tube.
Ah, but Missy, who's not a little crazy to use the underground?
So here I am, hammering the keys of my Boots PT-900 typewriter as I go from one temping job to another. Why am I doing it? Well, it could be to rekindle childhood memories. For some reason, our family seemed to spend an awful lot of time down the tube going from one auntie or uncle's home to the next as each relative lost patience with the three of us. And one of my earliest memories is of my mum taking us on the circle line. We'd been on it for quite some time when my younger sister Jay tugged at mum's dress.
Mum, I've been at this station before.
Jay was right. Mum made some excuse and we got off a few stations along, arriving at our final destination a little later than planned. Jay, though only six, was always smarter than the rest of us put together. And who can forgive that in a sister? Anyhow, soon after, mum went into hospital and didn't come out. Little Jay writes the bitch column in the Sunday People. My brother Neil? Well, he's done rather well for himself, selling t-shirts which say
ironic age
on the front, and on the back it says
it's not supposed to be funny, it's ironic, stupid.
Became the fashion icon of the decade.
Oh, Jenny, well, you know, she was ace. Good laugh, good fun, well, maybe a bit mad, but I think we all need a bit of madness in us. But I really do miss, well, I guess I feel a bit guilty about it all. I didn't really do anything, but I did, well, tell her my granddad's story about the old woman, which kind of started her off. I should have known my good times with her wouldn't last. Whenever things are going well for me, the great fat pigeon of fate is always looking to dump on my head. I remember when I first met her, well, I guess I liked her cheeky kind of beauty, her short, red, sticky, up anarchic hair, her sparkle of green eyes. I went, what an arse. But what the hell was with that typewriting? You could see the whole carriage weren't happy with her at all. She was getting some right snooty looks, you know. Yes, they didn't like it at all. They didn't say anything, of course not. Never do they? Everyone ignores everyone else down the tube. But anyway, I sort of plucked up the courage and said hi, and we started chatting. She told me she was working on a sci-fi story, a sort of Squirrel Nutkin meets Planet of the Apes. I told her that I was writing scripts for a comic where I'd created the amazing Sleeping Man, a normal man who, when asleep, gained superpowers, but couldn't do much because he was sleeping.
Don't make me sleepy, Mr. McKay. You wouldn't like me when I'm sleepy.
We seemed to click, and started meeting every week or so down the tube or later in a bar. And every time we met, she had some new idea for a novel.
And there's this man who leaves his suits at dry cleaning outlets across London just to get rid of them. And then his wife finds the laundry tickets. My Uncle Jim used to take me on trips in the driver's cab, and he'd point out the rats scurrying for cover as we whooshed past.
Run for your life, ratty rat!
I don't know what on earth made him think this would appeal to a girl of 12, but, well, I lapped it up. He told me that the rats have been down the tube for so long that they've developed a bat sense to see in the dark.
The sewers are full of ravenous pigs trapped down here in Victorian times when the roads were built over the old rivers of London.
He was a funny man, was Uncle Jim. Entertained us kids by putting on a battered boater and trying to sing underneath the arches at Christmas, even after they removed one of his lungs. He also gave me an idea for the novel I'm writing. During the war, he was a bit young for the army proper, so he was put in the Home Guard, and they had him posted to a disused underground station where they were storing many of the finest pictures from the National Gallery. Anyhow, my novel will be a heist novel about a plan to steal one of the most famous ones, like George and the Dragon.
Put down that cello, Nobler. The game's up.
I ain't going down for no 15th century Florentine masterpiece, copper. Ow!
That's the ending I've worked out.
Endings? Never endings. Just new beginnings, Missy. Each sad or happy fellow tripping round the circle line. I keep my eye on you all.
My granddad used to drive a tube train. He was proud of his job, you know, and proud of his shiny buttons. He used to tell me stories about the tube. He said there used to be a pub at Liverpool Street tube station, and when he stopped there, the landlord, a big burly Italian bloke with a twirly moustache, would come out with a pint for him before he got back on his way. It's true, cross my heart and hope to die. Jenny believed me. But then, I guess she's one of life's believers. How was I to know that when I told her granddad's tale that she'd fall for it, hook, line and sinker?
After I found this typewriter at Oxfam, it took me an age to find a shop that sold ribbons for it. Found it by pure chance down a back alley near Brewer Street after I'd done some secretarial work for a Soho film company. It was one of those cluttered up, chaotic art supply shops that had probably been in the same family for donkey's years. The man went into the back of his shop and pulled out a pack of 5 ribbons. Said he kept them in for a Dutch emigre poet who had a typewriter just like mine. The poet said she'd
rather die than write on any other machine.
I felt good about having such a creative typewriter. I sometimes think this tube carriage seems full of hungry eyes watching me. I look down on my typewriter as they examine this odd fish in their compartment. People behave differently in the tube. An old bag lady reeking of whiskey once sat next to me and harangued a trio of suits with Evening Standards glued to their faces.
Mug yourself in a pub by yourself. Shove it! Slug yourself, wipe it, don't it?
She went at them for 10, 15, 20 minutes. Not one of the suits even twitched. Then the bag lady winked at me and left.
I see ya! I see ya!
If I stop typing and look around the carriage, I see the snooty eyes dart away from me and onto more innocuous targets. A sign, an advert, some gum on the floor. The man in the seat opposite in a suit and tie welded to the seat transfixes his eyes on a poster advertising fragrant tissues from Marks and Spencer. There's a picture of a woman's nose near some tissue boxes with the headline, "Easier on the Tubes." A pale, bloated woman 2 seats along now takes a keen interest in her shoes. 2 teenage girls talk in hushed tones about the latest guy they fancy. The woman with sad eyes, always looking down, she's at the far end of the carriage, feels the shoulders of her brown checked jumper, the type Mum used to wear. I still cry in the bath about my mum. I think in some ways she knows I love her still. Her death, I guess, hit me more than the others. It's a painful memory, that time, those days, the funeral, losing it. Ended up in A&E. After that, I was sent to a mental unit. I took time to heal. I've got a diary from then. I wrote embarrassing crap like love equals suicide in blue crayon across 5 pages. Eventually, I found my way again. I healed. Going back to a normal school again was surreal, a world where the main concern was to find the next boyfriend. At the unit, it had been to find the next piece of glass. I liked Pete. Easygoing. Sweet, in a nice way, if you get my meaning. We'd have long chats into the night with a couple of bottles of wine and one of his CDs. He loved to tell me about his CDs and explain the lyrics to me until we both started giggling. Had a lot of time for Pete.
No, I really liked her. Lots and lots, you know. One of life's great optimists. One of those people who always saw the glass half full, if you get what I'm saying, not like half empty. I prefer it half drunk. And then I started telling her about my grandfather, who used to drive a train on the tube. He retired in the 80s when many of the trains were automated, but still had drivers to reassure the passengers. The drivers are just kind of there for decoration.
Pete told me about Widnes Station and Paul Simon and set me thinking about a new novel. It's a novel set at Widnes Station. Now, it's a fact that before he became famous with Simon and Garfunkel, Paul Simon was touring the folk clubs of Britain in the 60s. And one night at Widnes Station, while he waited for the last train to London, Simon wrote Homeward Bound. Now, my book will have him on the station meeting the elderly comedian and ukulele player George Formby. And Formby will help Paul Simon compose many of his greatest hits, as well as musing on the tricky questions of life and existence. Pete was a real completist when it came to Paul Simon. Used to play all the time at his pad.
Well, you know, he was going to do that album with Garfunkel, but they fell out again.
Yeah, right.
It was after that reunion, you know. Do you remember the stuff about that in the papers?
Yeah.
Sorry. Am I being a bit anal about Paul Simon?
That's one way of putting it. Oh, I'm sorry. It's really good that you know so much about one singer. It's a passion, and it's good to be passionate about things. I've tended to go off and on things, never sticking to one idea.
Yeah, but I talk for England on Paul Simon. Subject change. How's your writing going?
Now you really know how to depress me.
I'm sorry?
No, I'm just joshing. Oh. It's just, well, I wish I could get round to finishing one of my stories. I don't seem to have the patience to finish them.
But you tell some great stories.
Yeah, wall-to-wall A4 sheets of plots, but no finished products. I'm going through fits of plot diarrhoea, but completion constipation.
Oh, you'll get over it. You're bound to. You're the cleverest girl I know, you know.
Yeah, that's the problem with men. They're only after one thing when it comes to women. Brains.
Yeah, you show us your tits, and all we really care about is how high your IQ is. Do you want topping up?
Are you trying to get me drunk?
What? Poor innocent me?
Remember what Douglas Adams said? What's unpleasant about being drunk?
Ask a glass of water.
Do you think I'm mad with the tube and all?
No, just very funny.
What, funny ha-ha or pretty peculiar?
Just pretty pretty.
Oh, you're so sweet, Pete. I think this could be the one. Ghost Mentality by Jenny Madison. A girl called Emily, locked up in a secure unit for burning down her home. Her baby sister was killed in the fire. She starts screaming about a ghost. She goes to the unit psychiatrist.
But I swear I've seen the ghost and I'm frightened someone's going to get hurt.
Emily, I know that to you these visions are real, but...
It's not delusional, it's not. Why won't you listen? Let me out of here!
Then a youngster gets seriously burned and Emily's blamed for it. She swears it's the ghost that did it. She describes the ghost to the psychiatrist and he recognises who she's talking about. But despite the support of the psychiatrist, the girl gets put in an isolation cell. Then a boy is killed and the psychiatrist goes to talk to Emily.
Emily, I'm so sorry what they've done to you. I know the ghost exists because last night I saw it myself.
But it doesn't, Dr. Beach, because I made it all up. Everything.
No, that can't be so!
Dr. Beach.
Yes? Who is it? Who is it?
I've come for you.
No!
Dr. Beach!
The girl tries to save him, but it's too late, and she ends up being sentenced for the murder of the psychiatrist.
So, do you believe in ghosts?
I'd like to, but I'm not sure.
Why do you want to?
Because it gives some hope of an afterlife. And I'd like to see my mum again. I sometimes think she's keeping an eye on me. I sometimes tell her I love her. But I've never seen a ghost.
Yeah, I'd like to see one. I used to love the Mammoth Picador Book of Ghosts when I was a kid and thought I might go ghost hunting.
Yeah, it's fascinating stuff.
My stepdad told me that when he was really young, the furniture in his room used to move about in the night. He thought it was normal.
Well, children do.
Top up?
Yeah, that's great. I was once part of this writer's group, and this old bloke did this really good ghost story, and this snotty woman who headed the group put him down saying ghosts don't behave like that. And I told her to shut up, because we're all writers, and ghosts can do whatever we want them to do.
Did that go down well?
Well, they didn't ask me to contribute to the anthology, but it was so funny.
Well, late one night, over a bottle of wine, I think it was round my flat, I told her about my granddad. Oh, he could tell some tales about the tube. I told her about the army of cleaning ladies known as fluffers who used to go down and dust the tracks, you know, or something like that. And then there were the asbestos trains, which had to suck up the asbestos that collected in the tunnels when the tube train brakes were lined with the stuff. Yeah, no, that's totally true. Cross my heart. Yeah, well, I tell her about this story that my granddad Bill tells me, about this lady who lives in a carriage down the tube on the Circle Line that goes round and round and round, you know. My granddad said he'd never seen her or the carriage, but he knew men who said they had, or who'd caught a glimpse of the number 13 on the carriage. And these weren't men who were natural tale-tellers, no way, my granddad said. And Jen loved the story, and she said she'd track down the old lady, and I laughed, and she laughed, and we poured another glass of wine.
And so it starts. There are many stories, Missy. Many stories to track down on the Circle Line. Each face thinks they're heading somewhere, some station destination. I note each face, each look, each life. There are the regulars, the irregulars, the once-in-a-lifetime experiences. But who to track down? Take case one. A Mr. Brian Higgins, a name he has embossed on his leather case, with a frown he has embossed on his face. For each day this month, he's taken his suited aging body down to the tiptoe edge of the platform at Moorgate. Each day he psychs himself up to take the final step by his own hand. Will that end the story? No, not a bit of it, Missy.
So she went in search of the old woman, asking any and every soul down the tube if they had a clue about her whereabouts, you know. And I mean everyone. But the longer the search went on, the greater the distance grew between us.
Now observe the tobacco-yellow teeth of Eric Arkell. National service in Malaya taught him the value of life. He looks down and spits out some remark which frightens the gentlefolk at St. James Park westbound. They keep their distance. During the war, his mum got him to collect fag ends at the dancers at Blackpool Winter Gardens. He scoops up one from the floor and holds it tight in his hand.
I was losing her. But who was finding her? Nobody knew.
The Farringdon, I noticed Tiny Tim, a dirty face with a sparkling silver-studded harmonica. But his playing of My Bonnie is still as sadly off-key as it was when I first saw his baby-clean face in 1978. He thinks he's blowing his pains away, but dreams of returning to Dublin were blown a long, long time ago. There's you, Missy, disturbing bones with your rattling fingers. How many ghosts do you wake up from their slumbers as you go from one no-good job to another? And each new office clerk eyes you over and jokes to his colleague that he'll take you there and then. Do you wonder at the roads you took which have dumped you here? Or perhaps, Missy, Your twinkling eyes were fashioned only to look forward. And perhaps those young eyes are wise eyes.
And so now I had a goal. I put my novels aside and started the search for this lady. From the moment the tubes opened to closing time, I rambled around the tube stations asking guards, buskers, workers, anyone about the lady. Most gave me blank looks and saw me as a bit of a nut, but I kept at it. Pete, who wondered what he'd started, suggested the internet, so I looked up all the sites to do with the underground and started emailing them, but they didn't seem much help either. They did tell me about a ghost at Covent Garden Station. Apparently a West Indian porter asked for transfer after seeing a 6-foot-tall ghost of a man wearing a light grey suit and white glasses. But nobody had heard of the lady.
They rarely do, Missy. But then they're not looking, are they?
What I want to know is, how does Neo know he's really out of the Matrix when he comes out of the Matrix?
Oh, I think you're getting too deep even for that film. Anyhow, did you try the web?
Oh, the web's really crawling with underground railway sites.
Train spotters of the world unite. You have nothing to lose but your Biactol.
Yeah, but at least they're not as bad as bus spotters. I saw a pack of 20 of them one night at Crewe Coach Station, armed with jotting pads, pencils and video cameras. Now that was sad.
Oh, worse than that, have you heard of the Eddie Stobart spotters, who spot the firms, lorries up and down Britain's motorway network?
Yeah, okay, you win that one. Anyway, I got this email from this train spotter telling me how to buy his book, but also mentioning a man called Earl Johnson, who's worked on the Tube and was the best man to talk about myths and legends of the underground. He also told me where to find him, on the southbound platform of the District Line at Earl's Court. And there he was, just sitting there on a bench. Earl Johnson. A big-boned giant of a man, a creased face tough as leather, and wide, friendly eyes under wild grey brows. His cheeks shone with a loud laugh that I reckon they could hear all the way down the District Line.
Oh, yes, I know many stories about the tube lines. Some that are most perfectly true, some are mere rumours, and others are wild speculation. But then I've been riding the lines for some time, my dear. And at my age, you get to know a thing or two. But this underground's become a kind of home to me for many a day, for many a year, since I fell from grace and my overflowing wallet grew frayed at the edges and oh, so very empty. I could tell you things, my dear.
Is that why this bloke says you must know about the old woman of the Circle Line?
Oh, her. Maybe I could perambulate around that fair lady. Let us promenade up the station.
Yeah, go on then.
I hear you love stories, little lady.
Well, yes, that's kind of why I'm trying to find out about the lady of the Circle Line. Do you know where she...
All in good and venerable time, little lady. You know, if you love stories, you must hear the tale of the underground orphan. Once upon a time, a long time ago, on this very platform, a young mother threw herself under a train. And her young son, Alex, angry, confused, ran and ran into the depths of the tube. His playground was the underground. He dodged the guards and the workmen. He scavenged with the rats, licking clean packets of Walker's crisps. And he made friends with the pigeons. And he spent his life imagining what might lie above the station signs. What angry monarchs did he dream of at King's Cross? Did he search for the winged beast Gabriel at the Angel, or seek out clowns at Piccadilly Circus? One day, in a tunnel, he witnessed one workman beat his colleague to death. He was crouched in a dark crevice of the tunnel so he could not be seen, but a nearby rat hissed and the workman turned his torch towards Alex.
Sorry, mister, I didn't see nothing. Honest!
Too right! Come over here, all!
No! No!
Alex ran and ran. Alex headed upwards, up a maintenance shaft ladder and pushed hard against the iron manhole cover, but he couldn't get it open.
Did he get away? He must have.
The man was inches away, but then pigeons started pecking at the man's trousers. He lost grip and fell. And the workman was never again to see daylight. The boy managed to push the cover open and was dazzled by the light of the day. He'd made it to a new world. His new world.
That's a lovely story, Mr. Johnson.
Well, thank you, little lady. And it's all true. Told me by a most learned black rat I once happened to meet.
And the Lady of the Circle Line?
Ah, yes. The question almost flew out of my mind. Many apologies. Her name is the Duchess, and she is a most difficult lady to find. All I can say is that if you find that wondrous bird, a pigeon white as the February snow with eyes of sparkling sapphire, then maybe you might have a chance. He is a tricky bird to find, but you'll know him most certainly when you see him.
He was a wonderful old man, and I gave him a little peck on the cheek and thanked him so much. But I was left with one problem. How to find that pigeon out of so many? One particular albino pigeon with blue eyes. Would I really know it from all the others? But where am I going to find the pigeon?
I think you're getting too sort of obsessed, you know.
No, I'm just committed. Think, Pete, where haven't I looked for the pigeon?
You're like that cartoon. Hunt the pigeon, hunt the
That's
pigeon.
That's not funny, Pete.
Oh, come on.
Well?
Come on, Jen. Where's that smile? And she gave that cheeky smile and we hugged. But I was losing her as she was losing it. I was really worried for her. The passion to write seemed to give way to the chasing of pigeons all over London. She'd stopped doing her temping jobs. And when they threw her out of her flat, she came over to stay with me. Then one day I noticed her typing furiously in a carriage with people desperately trying to keep as far from her as possible, you know. Anyway, I looked down at her typewriter and the ribbon had finished. She was typing lines of nothingness.
There are pigeons everywhere in London, all shades, all personalities. But where's my pigeon? Many a day and night I spent dancing around the fountains in Trafalgar Square, searching for my elusive guide. I must find her, I must.
One day we're sitting quietly, having a coffee at Liverpool Street Station. She looked real gloomy. I wasn't having much luck shaking her out of her mood. Then her eye kind of caught something, and off she ran. I followed as best I could, you know. She jumped over the barriers and sailed down an escalator armrest after a pigeon that fluttered away from her. Onto the Circle Line platform she ran. She was quite a bit ahead of me. And then I saw her run to the end of the platform, towards a poster. Jenny!
And on the wall at the end of the station was a poster of London with Proud City in large bold letters, and below a quote which talked of the buildings losing themselves as the city hangs in the heavens. And the pigeon flew through the poster.
Jenny! Jenny! She seemed to just run into the wall. Run into the end wall. Oh, that's what I saw. And, you know, I can't really explain what I saw. And maybe I just missed seeing where she went. But I think I saw what I saw, you know.
Hello, Missy.
Mum! What?
Hello, Missy, my love.
But how?
Calm yourself, Missy.
But how long have you been here?
Quite some time, and I missed you and Jay and Neil, but I've kept my eye on you all. I think it's time to write all this down, don't you, Missy? We're moving off.
And we start moving, and I can see all the faces of the people on the platform, but I know they can't see me. But then, I'm not certain they ever did. It's easy to disappear on the tube.
So, this is a pretty little story you've found yourself in, Missy. But where to start? Where did we get on? And where do we get off? But a circle has no beginning and no end. That's the problem with novels. They must begin and end. Life isn't that simple.
I'd like to see Jenny again. I'm keeping an eye out for the pigeon. And I'm going to find him, because I've got superpowers. Well, at least when I'm asleep, I have. You know, Paul Simon wrote a song called A Poem on the Underground Wall.
last train is nearly due. The underground is closing soon. In the dark, deserted station, restless in anticipation, a man waits in the shadows.
Once upon a time, there was a young lady who used to travel round and round and round the Circle Line. Some say it's a lie. Some say it's the pure invention of an earl. Some say I'm just an old storyteller. But I've seen her, as sure as my name's Earl Johnson. And you must trust an earl. I'm a man of breeding, little lady, a man of breeding. But how does this story end? Well, as all good stories must end, in new beginnings.
Last train is nearly due, the underground is closing soon. In the dark, deserted station, restless in anticipation, a man waits in the shadows.
In Circle Line, Jenny was played by Natole Rahman, and Pete by Michael Spitzer. The Duchess was played by Claire Mace, and Louis Emmett was Earl Johnson. Jay was played by Kerry Riley, and Uncle Jim by Julian Powis. The Tramp was played by Becky Newman. David Hooper played the ghost, and Colin Thompson was the psychiatrist. Kathy Smith played Emily, Alex, and Tiny Tim. The Dutch Poet was played by Rian van Spaandonk, and Phil McPhillips was George Formby. Other parts were played by members of the cast. Circle Line was written by Nick Rigby and directed by Jenny Simmons and Alan Morgan.
And his heart is laughing, screaming, pounding the foam across the tracks around him. Shadowed by the exit light, his legs take their ascending flight to seek the breast of darkness and be suckled by the night.